Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, ladies and gentlemen. It's always our delight to have you on board as we face the issues. Looking forward to your dialogue and discussion to be involved in that which we're discussing today. We'll be talking about today COVID mandates versus the Constitution. COVID mandates versus the Constitution. In just a moment, after a very brief monologue, I'll be introducing a very special guest that we have with us today that I believe will be informative and directive for us as we hear this broadcast today. I pray that you're joining in each and every day and that you pick up the telephone right now and invite others to join in the dialogue and discussion. That telephone number for you to join in that discussion, 831-0917, 831-0917. Your telephone call goes directly through to the studios, right to our microphones, so we can entertain your question, your comment, your dialogue and discussion on the issue of the day. It's across America, we realize today, and around the globe, that there seems to be a demonic delusion being pushed by Big Pharma, the media, and the dictator political leaders that we have on the local, state, and national level that will have you to believe that you need to wear a mask, that you need to have COVID vaccination. In fact, there's the push for the COVID passport that's being pushed today in America and around the globe. We'll talk about those and other issues that surround that particular core issue as we face the issues today. Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you, as we face the issues, we do so based on the authority of Scripture. It's not based on a denominational dogma. It's not based on political ideological bent. It's not based on what someone may think or say. But our position, our stand on issues, is based solely on the written, revealed, inspired, infallible, inerrant word of God. Jesus said to his disciples in John 8:31-32, "If you continue in my word, then you're my disciples indeed. And then you shall know the truth. The truth shall make you free." And then in John 14:6, Jesus makes the declaratory statement, "I am truth." Jesus makes that statement in John 14:6, verse 6, "I am truth." And then further in John 17:17, the Lord Jesus makes the declaratory statement again when he says, "Thy word is truth." It's the truth of the word of God, ladies and gentlemen, that we should stand on today, the inspired, infallible, inerrant word of God. It was George Orwell, the secularist, that made the statement, "The further a society drifts from the truth, the more it will hate those who speak it." We find that to be very true today. Local level, state level, and national level, you take any political elected leader, and so often they're fearful for standing on the truth that they might lose some constituency or some lobbyist funding of their next campaign account. I'm thankful for those that will take a stand for truth, regardless of the fallout that it might have. It was the former U.S. Senator Jim DeMint that warns America's decline is linked to the death of truth. Jim DeMint, in part, in an elongated article on that subject, says, "Truth is the core principle of the Judeo-Christian values, which are the foundation of Western civilization. Judeo-Christian values are derived from the Bible, and the Christian church is the only custodian of the Bible. If you want to know the reason for the death of truth in America, look no further than the decline of Bible-based Christianity," Jim DeMint wrote. This is the reason, ladies and gentlemen, I go back to the 15th century theologian and church reformer, Jan Hus. Jan Hus said, "Faithful Christians, seek the truth, listen to the truth, learn the truth, love the truth, tell the truth, live the truth, and defend the truth even to death." And that's the position that I hold today. And I pray that you, as our listening audience, also hold to that standard. Ladies and gentlemen, this portion of the day's broadcast is sponsored by Tools for Time. Tools for Time is an outdoor power equipment dealership company specializing in the turnkey business packages for individuals looking to own your own landscape or lawn care business. Tools for Time carries the full line of homeowner brands like Honda and Echo. Tool for Time, ladies and gentlemen, has a knowledgeable staff that can answer all of your questions about professional landscape lawn care equipment as well as the homeowner brand lawn care equipment. Tool for Time, ladies and gentlemen, is located at 11291 Old San Augustine Road, 11291 Old San Augustine Road. There's a gigantic benchmark, 165-foot flagpole with Old Glory, the U.S. flag flowing 24/7 at that location. Find the flag, the flagpole, at 11291 Old San Augustine Road. Ladies and gentlemen, at the base of that flagpole, you'll find the home of Tools for Time. ToolsForTime.com. ToolsForTime.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about COVID mandate versus the Constitution today. I'm looking at an article, and I'll briefly touch on it by way of segue to the introduction of our special guest today. Here's an article that says, Democratic governor signs executive order to turn away unvaccinated people from the hospitals and prioritize treatment to the vaccinated patients. I just made a little marginal note on that. By the way, it's the state of Colorado. And I made a little marginal note, inhumane, barbaric, unconstitutional, but it's being done across America today. This is the reason, ladies and gentlemen, I am delighted, I am thankful that we have one governor in our nation that I am thankful for. Now, there are a number of good conservative Republican governors, but I'm especially thankful for and proud of our governor right here in the state of Florida. In fact, I was recently visiting with some family members from South Carolina. We're up in Georgia visiting, and over across the line is the state of South Carolina. And we're talking about what Governor DeSantis is doing in the state of Florida. And he said, I am thankful for that. He's a stand-up guy, he said. He said, I wish we had that kind of governor in the state of South Carolina. I wish we had that kind of leadership in the state of South Carolina. Governor DeSantis is becoming renowned and well-known for his stand for truth and his stand for our Constitution. And this is the reason I'm thankful, ladies and gentlemen, today to have one of our legislators that's with us today, Florida House District 32 Representative Anthony Sabatini. Congressman Sabatini, welcome to our broadcast on Let's Face the Issues today. We're thankful that you've taken time out of what I know is a busy schedule there in the halls of the House and the Senate in Tallahassee, taking the time out to do this interview with us to update our people, our listeners, on some of the things that's taking place. Congressman, welcome to Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much for having me on, Dr. Youngblood. It's an honor. Thank you.
Congressman, I am delighted. In fact, recently I had a former legislator from District 1, Mike Hill, recently had him on the broadcast, and he made a very complimentary statement. He said at one time, I was number one conservative in the House. Now that I'm not in the House, Anthony Sabatini is the number one professional congressman that is conservative. And that was a broadcast that I was delighted to hear, because I've talked with you before, we've interviewed before, and I'm thankful for your conservative stand on so many of the issues that face Floridians today. Congressman, tell our listeners about your stand on forced wearing of the mask and the forced vaccination. Just briefly, before we get into some of the nuts and the bolts of some of the legislation that's been passed, tell me your stand on it, and why do you take those stands?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I pride myself on being the first and for a long time the only Republican in the state of Florida that was anti-lockdown, anti-mask mandate from day one. And I fought all of the mandates. In fact, I sued your mayor over there, the mayor of Jacksonville, Lenny Curry. I sued the city of Jacksonville for having a mask mandate along with 15 other lawsuits because the mask mandates were completely and totally unconstitutional, just like the lockdowns were. And so I fought those as hard as I possibly could. And, of course, I fought the vaccine mandates, et cetera, going forward after that. And now we're at this point where these private corporations are pushing vaccine mandates. And so for basically the entirety of the summer, starting from July all the way up until 2 days ago, I was the only legislator that would speak publicly about banning private sector corporate vaccine mandates that these liberal woke companies were pushing, like the big healthcare companies. And also,
Congressman, you're cutting in and out.
I don't know.
You're going in and out, I'm sorry to say.
Forced a special session, and the legislature came in and passed the bill.
Congressman, I am thankful for your stand. Let me ask you a question that I believe could be on the hearts and the minds of some of our listeners today. By the way, announcement to our listeners, 831-0917, 831-0917 is the telephone number if you'd like to ask Congressman Sabatini a question about the special legislative session that they're wrapping up today, or if you'd like to ask any questions about our conversation and dialogue today, feel free to do so. Congressman, you've said that it's unconstitutional. I understand that. I'm in full agreement with that. No qualms or differences on that opinion, but specifically and specificity, tell our listeners why it is unconstitutional. How do we determine it is unconstitutional to have the forced lockdown, the forced mask mandate, the forced vaccination mandates that we find taking place across America today?
Well, I think all of them would be basically the way they'd have to sell them, the scrutiny they have to meet legally for them to be upheld as constitutional would have to meet strict scrutiny. The lockdowns violate the right to travel, which is a fundamental implicit part of your 14th Amendment right of just due process and autonomy of your own person. So to lock someone in their home is unconstitutional unless the government can show that it's a compelling government interest and narrowly tailored to this most specific purpose, which they never attempted to do. Mask mandates violate the right to privacy and bodily autonomy that are in both the state and federal constitution because of the fact that, and of course the one in the state constitution is even more robust, because it violates the person's right to control their own body. And they never tried to prove that mandatory masks, would actually slow down or stop coronavirus. In fact, they never even attempted to make the argument that if you had mask wearing, that it was going to slow down or spread the virus. And they never even made the argument. If they tried, they failed, but they wouldn't have. And mass vaccination is a violation of people's autonomy and freedom in this exact same way, the 14th Amendment, 5th Amendment due process clause, but also additionally the 1st Amendment, because it violates a lot of folks' religious, they have a religious objection to it. So it would be struck down for a multiple amount of ways now, but we have some of these radical leftist judges on the bench, including many that were appointed by so-called Republicans, who would ignore a lot of these things because they don't want to see the wrath. They don't want to feel the wrath of the left and the media, and so they just go with the flow. And these types of judges should be impeached for violating the Constitution, but it's a hard thing to do. And so a lot of them still continuously sit on the bench and just rule for the government in all these cases, vaccine cases, mask cases, lockdowns, social distancing, all the rest of it, because they're not really servants of the people. They're judges that care more about appeasing the left and the media.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Congressman, I want you to know, and you've heard me say this before, and for the benefit and edification of our listeners, I want to say it again. I'm personally thankful for you being in the position that you're in. And by the way, speaking of this issue, I'm going to just kind of tuck this in at this point. I understand you're running for a Senate seat, and I would like for our listeners to know what Senate seat, and let me encourage them to stand with you in prayer, stand with you in whatever way we can to undergird your attempt in this seat, that you can be a further benefit and blessing to the state of Florida.
Sure. Well, I'm actually running for the U.S. Congress, the United States Congress in Central Florida in District 7, which is northern Orlando and Seminole County and a small part of Volusia County. That's the actual congressional seat for which I'm running, not actually state Senate, but actually U.S. Congress. So I'm going from the state house, the state legislature, to the U.S. House.
Well, I'm thankful to hear that. I was delighted to hear, and my understanding was it was local for the state, but I'm thankful to know that it's on a national level. So, ladies and gentlemen, before this broadcast is over, we're going to get Congressman Sabatini to give us some contact information so that we can pray for him, encourage him, and do all that we can to support him. Some might say, Congressman, some of our listeners have probably a total residential category of 2+ million people. Don't know how many is listening on a daily basis. But some in the Northeast Florida might say, well, that's not my district. But I want our listeners to understand, we're elected to go and obviously represent all of the people, not just a particular district that you're elected from. And so as a result of that, we want to talk about later in this broadcast, before we close the broadcast today, contact information so that our people, our listeners, can support you, undergird what you're doing. Congressman, I'm looking at an article that says, governor takes over state's private businesses, mandates vaccine for all. It's the governor of the state of Washington that's going beyond the OSHA mandate, and the OSHA mandate, as you know, and we'll talk about that with one of your bills that was just passed in just a moment, but with the OSHA mandate, it was for 100 employees or more. And now with this governor in the state of Washington, this article says the governor of Washington has begun the process that could result in a statewide mandate for all workers to accept the COVID-19 shot if they're going to get a paycheck at all. Across America already, universities, schools, and hospitals have COVID vaccination mandates, even though as an experimental treatment, those actions remain under court challenge in many cases. Congressman, I think you're aware of the fact, as I am, that there are hundreds and hundreds of cases right now that's pending from governors and from other leadership in the United States of America against the COVID mandate that's going out of the White House by Joe Biden. Now, speak to that issue for just a moment. Does Biden have the authority to mandate a mask, to mandate a COVID shot, to mandate any of this? And what Biden is saying, is it in fact an executive order or not?
All of the mandates he's put through are blatantly unconstitutional, and they're violations of the states of the U.S. federal statutes from which they're issued. OSHA, there's nothing found in OSHA which would give it the power to begin a new vaccination regime. There's no rational basis for making it that every single worker in businesses with more than 100 employees, which is also a completely arbitrary category, arbitrary distinction, saying that it has to be people with 100 employees or more. It's kind of a silly, made-up number. There's nothing that grants them that power. And all the other mask mandates and vaccine mandates Biden has put forth also lack statutory authority. They're really more of a circus act. He put them forward to scare people into getting vaccinated and to also give cover to the big liberal woke companies that wanted to do mandatory vaccine mandates, didn't want to do it independently on their own because they would be attacked by members of the public, you know, in the media, et cetera. They wanted to pretend that they had to do it because of the pressure from the federal government. So I think they convinced Biden to put forth these various, which will all be struck down by courts in the next few weeks. OSHA has already forcing its vaccine mandate because it was stayed by court, and they've had dozens of lawsuits against them already, and they expect to lose. They've already partially lost, and they're going to lose completely pretty soon here.
Congressman, you may or may not want to address a question. We're going to get to the bills that were passed in just a moment. I'm looking at an article that says Pfizer falsified its data in vaccine trials, according to a whistleblower. Hours before the CDC panel approved Tuesday the fact of Pfizer vaccine for children 5 to 11 years of age, the British Medical Journal published an article featuring a whistleblower's charges that the poor practices at a contract research company helping to carry out COVID-19 vaccine trials last fall may have compromised all data, all integrity, and patient safety. It goes on to talk about the research group that had done that and how the data was falsified. Patients were employed in the study were inadequately done, no training given to the vaccinators, and slow to follow up, et cetera, et cetera. It is a basic condemning article about the way the Pfizer vaccination trial was taking place, and yet it was approved. Do you find anything in your repertoire of research, understanding, and or your position on it? Do you believe that the Pfizer, Moderna, or the J&J vaccinations are effective? And second question subordinate to that, are they effective as they claim to be? Are they effective at all?
I think the truth is that they're slightly effective with particular people of different age groups and health categories. Basically, the efficacy of the vaccine was grossly exaggerated by the media, both in the sense that it would stop transmission and also protect the person themselves from even getting the vaccine. So they lied about a lot of that stuff. And now, of course, it's coming out. There's, you know, an enormous amount of people who are twice vaccinated who are still receiving COVID and getting COVID and giving it off. So they lied about the efficacy of the vaccine. It was a way – they basically overpromised so that way they could get people to believe that the mass mandates that were going to come out were essentially a good thing and not some permanent new role of government in everybody's lives, you know, administering a booster shot every 6 months or denying people the ability to move freely or purchase things or be employed at a job, et cetera. And, you know, people were stupid enough to believe that. We have a lot of people who don't. They're not suspicious of government. They have seen no issue with government grossly exaggerating its powers and getting involved in each and every element of our lives in a permanent way. And so that's what's happening. But no, I mean, they lied about the vaccine. They knew that the vaccine was far less effective than they said. But they pushed it just to basically insert their own self-importance. Politicians and people in the deep state love the idea of the government being in charge of parts of people's lives. It gives them more power. It gives them more meaning. And that's what this is all about.
Well, a good example of that, Congressman, I'm sure you're aware of it. The state of Vermont is perhaps the most vaccinated state in America. Some 88% of their citizens are vaccinated, and yet some 79%, I believe I'm correct on that number, 79% of those going into the hospital with COVID are vaccinated. That clearly identifies and substantiates what you just said in relation to that. And yet there's a mindset that we need to obey. Even now, as you're aware, and perhaps our listeners may or may not be aware, that now Pfizer and others are saying you need a booster shot, maybe a second, third, or fourth booster shot. And now St. Anthony Fauci is saying that there perhaps is a need for a continual booster shot every season against COVID-19. Do you think that is wise? What is your opinion on the COVID vaccination? Should we continue to be living in a state of fear that I've got to get another booster shot, or should we put it to rest once and for all as a nation, and especially in the state of Florida that you represent us in?
No, I mean, it's totally insane that I'm against all mandates, and they knew that the vaccine wasn't going to work and that there's going to be an unlimited amount of so-called booster shots. They just did it in order to gain a foothold. It started with 15 days to slow the spread, then it was a temporary lockdown, and then it was social distancing, and then masks, and then now first it was, you know, vaccine choice, and then the booster shots, now it's mandates. I mean, who knows what's next? And as long as people just, like cattle, just continue to go along with this insane regime of control over their lives and their personal health care decisions and personal liberty, then you're going to see a drastically increased role of government. And we have to fight it. We have to fight it at every level. And the truth is, Florida's fighting back, but they're really not fighting hard enough. We should have completely and totally nullified that federal law and just shut the government out, federal government out of Florida, shut OSHA out, shut CMS out. Because what's happening, it's only going to get worse from here.
Yes, tell us about, Congressman, about House Bill 1. That's the rejection of COVID-19 vaccination mandate. Tell us what's in that law. It's now passed, waiting for the governor to sign, as I understand it. Tell us what's in that and what is the efficacy of it for the state of Florida and for the Floridians.
Sure. So it was supposed to be a very strong bill. It's what the governor wanted. It's what I wanted. But we have a lot of rhinos, a lot of corrupt Republicans in the legislature who are really beholden to the special interests in Tallahassee and around our state. So they watered the bill down significantly. It's still a decent bill. It's much better than the position we were at beforehand. But it's not nearly as strong as it needs to be. Now, it does give the ability people to opt out of vaccine mandates. It should have just totally banned vaccine mandates. It gives the ability to the Attorney General to issue a fine against a business that fires somebody for not being vaccinated. Well, I think that's far too weak. It should have been a private cause of action. They should have been able to get an injunction, damages, lost wages, et cetera. That didn't happen either. You know, there's a lot of problems with the bill. It doesn't protect your medical privacy. I don't think an employer should even be able to ask you about your vaccination status. This bill, unfortunately, still allows nosy employers to invade your private rights and ask you about your vaccination status. That's wrong, too. So it's a weak bill, but it's much better than the position we were at. So, of course, I voted for it. And we'll see if it gets upheld. I'm hoping that it's actually going to be upheld and used by people and that these large corporations don't find a way to just walk around it.
Congressman, I'm looking at a portion of what you just spoke of. It says among the measures that private business would be blocked from imposing COVID-19 vaccine mandates, quote, unless they allow workers to opt out for medical reasons, religious beliefs, immunity basis based on previous infection, or regular testing, or an agreement to wear protective gear. Now, I find that a little onerous in that bill, and of course you just touched on that. It's a pretty weak bill. The regular testing and an agreement to wear protective gear. This shouldn't be required at all in either event. That's my opinion, imposing on our liberties as citizens about our own health. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, it's a very weak bill. It was weakened by the rhino Speaker of the House, a guy named Chris Sprouse. He's a very liberal, Jeb Bush-style Republican. And then the Senate President, Wilton Simpson, who's very corrupt and basically bought and paid for by some of the big industries in the state, doesn't really serve the people of Florida, but whoever's giving donation money to him. So you have some really weak rhino corrupt figures in Florida politics who don't agree with the governor. They're not going to fight the governor. They're going to do what the governor tells them to do. But their pushback was weakening the bill to the point of almost nothingness. So an employer now can actually tell somebody, well, I can't fire you for being vaccinated. Well, I can make you wear a mask all day, wear gloves all day, get tested every morning that you come to work. I could reduce your pay. I could remove you. I could put you in a different work position so your conditions of employment are severely constricted. They can do all types of stuff to really penalize and continue the medical apartheid that we're seeing now, the separation of anybody who's not vaccinated and the mistreatment of them under this bill. So once again, all those things were legal ahead of time, so this bill was a decent step forward, but fell way, way, way short of where we ideally need to be to fix the situation of medical apartheid in the society, this totalitarian society that we're becoming.
A question. You're familiar with this more so than I am. What's called enabling legislation? Once the legislation is passed, somebody's got to sit down and draw up the enforcement of that. Is there any penalty, i.e. a financial penalty for anybody breaking the law once this is signed into law?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Is there any, in this bill, is there any financial penalty for any organization, company, or individual breaking the law once it is signed into law?
Technically, yes, but it's not nearly strong enough. It basically, if you would have allowed if there was a private cause of action, you could sue for all the money you lost, your time, expenses, legal fees, et cetera, and you'd get a very large sum, and it would basically prevent employers from ever mistreating you because they'd be very afraid. But instead, this bill weakened it to the point of silliness. It gave the attorney general the ability, if she or he wishes, to pursue an administrative fine against a company of $10,000, which is way too less. So I don't even call it a fine. I call it a fee because these big companies can just say, you know what, I'll pay the $10,000 and can this guy. I don't really care. So, you know, that's what you're going to start seeing is them paying the $10,000 fee and then mass firing all these people. Now, if the company's more than 100 employees, the fee is $50,000. But when you're talking about a company like Disney can just say, you know what, we'll spend $1 million and fire all these people and fire hundreds on the spot. And, you know, in that case, this legislature abandoned those people. And that's why I said on the House floor, the Senate, you know, the legislature should apologize to the people that have been fired because we're not doing enough.
Absolutely. Congressman, we've got a caller on the line. Tom, go over the question or comment, please.
Yes, Dr. Youngblood. I'd like to ask the representative a question. In August, I went and had my DOT physical, and everything was normal. And a week ago, I had my yearly checkup, and it was quick, go to the kidney doctor. Your kidneys are failing. And in August, I also took the Pfizer vaccine, and I'm just wondering, is that tied together as a representative seen any cases where you took the vaccine and your kidneys started going out?
Congressman, could you answer that? I've got about 20 seconds left in this.
For some reason, my reception was a little soft. Can you paraphrase that question? I apologize if you say it again.
Tom's question was, since he's taken the Pfizer vaccine and he's having kidney problems, for any reason that should be a corollary in his in the medical findings?
Well, the problem is there's a federal statute that prevents liability against these manufacturers. So this is how corrupt of a state we're in today, that the injuries from these vaccines, you cannot collect damages and actually replenish yourself from the harm in which these vaccine companies have caused. And so that's shameful and terrible, but it's actually the law right now. And so I'm for